I want to thank everybody for tuning in to the show, to the As Good As It Gets podcast. And I know you guys just did your show, but I have to say this. Everyone out there, I want to wish you a very happy holiday season. I know a lot of times that's taken for granted. These holidays come, and I just wanted to make sure I acknowledge everyone and wish you a happy and a safe Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Yes, sir.
All right. Well, you know what? I want to say to you, Derek, it's going to be an interesting one for you and George, so I pray for you that you get through these holidays knowing that one of the most important people in your life is not going to be there. So hopefully you have the strength to get through that.
Wow, thank you very much, Mike. You're going to give me teary-eyed. I appreciate that.
Hey,
you guys.
Go ahead,
Ricky.
I wanted to get into with you guys before Coach Casey. We're going to be joined by Coach Don Casey in a couple of minutes. But one conversation
okay.
I want to have with you guys, I was talking with Mike in the earlier show. Last night went over to Eastern Michigan in Ypsilanti. Got a chance to see Imani Bates, 15-year-old phenom, a great young player, 6'9", skilled, plays the right way, unselfish. His team lost last night. He did not have a good game. He struggled. He scored 24 points, but he struggled throughout the game. They played River Rouge, and I know you're familiar with River Rouge, Derek, being a Detroiter, and they played him very physical, and they were able to get the win. River Rouge was number 3 in the state of Michigan, and Lincoln was number 1 in the state of Michigan. But you know what? We're going to get to that conversation later because I think we're joined by our guest, Derek. I'm going to let you bring him in.
Well, this gentleman means a lot to me. I don't even think he knows how special he is to me. But my professional career, he had a lot to do with it. The first team, I was drafted by Philadelphia. Things didn't go well at that time. I was a little out of condition, and then so I went on and played in Europe. When I decided to come back to towards the NBA, I went out to the L.A. Clippers. And there was a guy out there named by the name of Don Casey, and he was the head coach at the time. And I want to welcome this gentleman in. He's had a big impact on my basketball life. How you doing, Mr. Casey?
I'm doing fine, man, and congratulations.
Thank you. Congratulating you. Thank you for coming on the show. Mr. Casey, I have my partners on here tonight. We have my regular partners, Mr. Ricky Hampton. Occasionally we have Michael Robertson. He's out there in your area. So I just wanted to tell you hello. We've got these two guys on here, and Mike really wanted to be on. He thinks very highly of you. So I wanted to welcome Mike onto the show, and I wanted to welcome you as well and tell you it's a pleasure.
Oh, thank you. You got a good thing going here, and the days of the Clippers, that were difficult, but we got through it.
Hey, Coach, I got a question for you. How was it coaching Derek?
He was, it would come to mind if there was something that you could actually point to that would not be out of the norm outside of playing hard and trying and maximizing the word effort, which to me separates many of the players. Many of them, they all have talent, individual skills, but it's the effort. And when you see terrific players that in an 82-90 game schedule that bring the effort almost every night as much as they can, and Derek fits right into that mold.
Mr. Case, I have to tell Ricky, so him and Mike are no. Hey, Ricky, at that time, and I'm going to be honest, and I just try to be straight up, I wasn't in shape at that time. We went out there. Mr. Casey brought in, it's been the hardest conditioning of my entire career. We brought in Dr. Jack Ramsey.
Yes.
And I wasn't in good shape. At that time, they kept a guy in front of me, and he was one of my best friends, and to this day, he still is. They kept Michael Young from the Houston Cougars.
Ooh.
Yeah, well, That was that camp up at the, I don't know, was that Cal Poly where we had Bob Stack and Twardzik, and we had a good group of coaches, and Dr. Jack came in, and you know, we got off to a decent start.
Yeah, Dave Twardzik. And Mr. Casey, I want to ask you this before, because I think your son, we're trying to get your son, he said he'll be calling in. But I want to ask you, because you've been there, you started, a lot of people don't know you coached the Temple Owls for 9 or 10 years.
Yes, I was fortunate to become the assistant coach for the legendary Harry Litwack at Temple in the Big Five of Philly in 1966, leaving the Bishop Eustace High School, and then stayed there to 82 until going into the league. From 72 to 82, I was the head coach, and we did, you know, we did good. You know, we did as good as we could with the resources we had. We had good players, worked hard, city kids, and then went into the league. And then John Cheney succeeded me, did very well. Now they have Aaron McKee, who was Fran Dunphy's assistant during the good years they had. And I saw them play at USC. Mike and I, my son and I went up, courtesy of Andy Einfeld and Temple. And Temple's got a very nice team, like San Diego State. A good team that has players that aren't superstars but show up every night and can have good games. They're good teams to watch.
When you went there for your 10 years, and then you all of a sudden how did you end up leaving Temple and then become an assistant coach for the Chicago Bulls?
Well, it's, you know, like players get traded, coaches get fired. I went to the Chicago Bulls when Paul Westhead, after being with the Lakers, went there, and after 1 year, Rod Thorne thought he wasn't. I don't know what his problem was. You know, Paul was a speed coach, and he said it didn't fit the material. My question was, why did you hire him in the first place? And then Jimmy Lynam went to from Portland to San Diego Clippers, and then Don Chaney and I became his assistants, and then they moved up to L.A. and up to L.A. And then when Chris Ford became the coach of Boston, he asked me to come in with him. And spent 7 years there, then in the Nets. So from the Clippers to the Boston was going like from purgatory to heaven.
hey, Coach, Mike Robinson has a question for you. But before Mike comes on, we want to bring in a special guest that you might know. Mike, are you there?
Yeah, hello.
Oh, Mike, I thought you were working. Mike Watson keeps the rent, pays the rent for the family now. So,
well, let me tell
you. You guys should get to know him the way, because he works for 805, a Firestone Brewery. So he might be able to get you some deals.
Well, I had to pull off a miracle, so let me tell everyone so they'll know who we just brought on. We just brought on Coach Casey's son, Mike Casey. And I wanted Mike to come on as well because Mike is familiar with me. Before I actually made it to the NBA, I played in Santa Barbara. And
yep.
We had a CBA team there. When I got picked up, we were the best team in the CBA. So Mike was familiar with my career actually before I made the NBA. And that's why I wanted him to be on and plus to be on with his dad. So that, thank you very much for coming on, Mike. I appreciate you.
Oh, no, thanks for, thanks for having my dad and for letting me join. I know he's the name of the family, but I'm the one that remembers all the stories. So I've got, I can listen to my dad talk for 10 years straight and still not hear every story. I mean, the stories that he was able to accomplish with all, you know, working with his friends in the NBA, especially making a living out of, you know, the game of basketball. It's the stories that everyone tells. I mean, I'm sure you guys have some stories too. They're just, they're fun, you know. They're just great stories.
It sounds like Coach Casey needs to be working on a book too. all those stories.
Yeah. Yeah, but some of the parts in there no one would believe. So it's the fact is that with the working in the NBA, people don't realize. I think they do now, but the NBA player is of all the major league sports is probably the most scrutinized player because it's up close and personal. They don't have helmets on or, you know, baseball hats, and the NBA made the transition in the society to the black athlete that could really play the game. Not that the white athlete couldn't. It was that the better of the two. The white athlete was moving itself from the city to the suburbs, you know, into soccer, lacrosse, and those sports. It's like the Canadians you know, just penetrated the NHL for all those many years because that was their sport. Basketball is an urban city sport. And the athlete in the NBA is probably the most underestimated, I don't know if I'm saying this correctly, individual, both on and off the court. I've had great relationships, you know, with the Jason Williams, the Kendall Gills, the Junior Bridgmans, Sammy Cassell, Sherman Douglas, the, you know, the Birds of the world, Reggie Lewis, you know, God rest him. I mean, you guys are really not, you're special. Not that you're different or better than other humans, but the skill that you were able to maximize from the playgrounds, from the CBA, under duress, pressure to make to get that contract, and as in many others, many other things in life, this is different. When you go out to work, there's somebody out there trying to stop you to do what you want to do and you can do best. So I had so much high regard for the professional athlete and particularly the NBA player that I got to know, and you guys fall right into that. That tent of good people.
Let me ask you to say this before Michael Robertson comes on. I want to thank you because when I do this show with these gentlemen, I do my show with Ricky. I always try to tell the young people, you know, in our lives we impact a lot of young people, and sometimes they don't get the true gist of the situation about how athletes are. I always talk about the relationships. And at the end of the day, that's the thing that matters the most. Basketball is just a part of it. But to still be talking to people like yourself, you're a young 82. And here we are still talking. To me, that's what made this game so special, the opportunity to meet other people and to continue those relationships for the, as we get older and before our time expires. So I want to thank you for saying that. This gentleman
will
go crazy.
No,
let him ask you a question, Coach.
It's up front. It really is. I mean, the athlete, you know, during the 80s, it was not easy for a lot of people. The league was going through transition with the drugs, the question of the white audience versus and the NBA and when they're with David Stern and the Players Union. Just overcame those obstacles by just everybody being themselves. And, you know, not that I sent every NBA player a Christmas card or they sent me one, but what the respect and the hard work and being in the huddle together to get through that season. I mean, I saw for years and the NBA player more than I saw my kids. And my wife, I didn't seem to bother my wife that much, but I don't know about the kids. It's that you're in a battle of survival. Now, whether you have the contract or not, you got pride. You know, you want to perform. You want to be good. You want to look good, and you want to continue. So, the afterlife is very important, and you guys done a good job with the afterlife.
Well, Dad, if I could touch on, you know, what Derek was referring to, you know, at the CBA with the Islanders, you know, he and I were texting the other night, and I said to him, I said, I don't think most of the players that jumped, to your team, to the Clippers, and elsewhere, played for the Islanders for more than 2 months. It was like Derek said, when he came in, we were the number one team. I believe you cannibalized half of the team, Dad. Carlton McKinney, Jim Leff, Derek, Leon Wood was on that team. Juwan Orr made it through. Larry Spriggs. I mean, these guys, and like I said, I think Derek, by the time Derek found his way around Santa Barbara, he was gone. He got called up, and that's when, in my opinion, the CBA really was, it wasn't just a minor league. It had substance, like you know, Dad. It's like now today they talk about the D League, the G League. You know, these players came and went, and when they went to higher levels. And like I said to Derek the other day, you know, we wound up making it to the playoffs that year, and I think Coach Sonny Allen, he had maybe 25 players come through the system because he lost all his great players to the NBA. And it was, I'll never forget the day that Elgin Baylor was in the arena, the Santa Barbara City College. Finally, someone came to scout the team, and I had to walk up to him and I introduced myself. And I had just got off the phone with you, Dad, and you told me that Danny Manning had ruptured his other Achilles. And I walked up and told Elgin that, and he looked at me like, who told you that? I said, my dad. He ran out of the gym to find a payphone. He didn't even know. I mean, that's what it was.
I don't know if we had cell phones in those days.
No, and I don't, it's not, but even if the office knew that he was there, who's calling, who's got the Santa Barbara City College telephone number?
Well,
I mean,
that's where I was introduced during the clinic at one time at Santa Barbara to Jimmy Ian. And Jimmy Ian was at Santa Barbara, junior college, and he became an assistant coach with us and has had a terrific career in the NBA. In fact, he's in Santa Barbara now, after his Lakers stint. So, yeah, there's a lot of 6 degrees of separation.
Mr. Casey, I have this guy, Ms. Michael Robertson. The reason I had him on the show, because he's familiar with the basketball that's going on out there in California. Mike, go ahead and get your question. I want you, because I want to hear you. I'm interested myself in what you got to ask.
All right, Coach. Pleasure to have you on here. So you've had a wide array of basketball experience, high school, college, and all that, also as a player in the ABA and NBA. But you had a moment where, well, not your moment, but the NBA moved Buffalo out to San Diego first, and now the Clippers where they are now. Being that you had a connection with the Clippers, what do you think about that whole scenario of them leaving Buffalo and where they are now, where some people would argue that they're the best team in L.A.?
I wasn't when I came with the with Jimmy Lynam in that move. It was a very complex move. And to be honest, I don't know all the details. I know that that San Diego, the Clippers, Sterling was responsible at that time for the contracts of the former Celtic players that had deferred. And the players almost went on strike back then because he was not making the payments. Arn Tillem was involved, Alan Rothenberg, and we were just trying to coach. Not being that familiar with the league and its nuances. But in the midnight, he moved up to L.A. and up we go. And we, it was hard, very hard. But everyone tried. And then, I get the call to, go to the Boston, which was terrific. Where they are today demonstrates how important ownership is. It's an absolute trickle down. Good ownership, doesn't guarantee, but enhances the ability for the franchise and the team and the coach to benefit. That team was in the ashes when Steve Ballmer took it over, the Microsoft magician. He's magna cum laude from Harvard, everything you would want in an owner. This man has demonstrated. Every NBA owner should send him a Christmas card because that team, being in the ashes, he paid $2 billion for. if the LA Clippers, as bad as they were, disjointed, and he paid $2 billion, what would the Lakers, the Knicks, the Chicago, what would they be worth? Well, they got a lot of worth because of what he has done. His approach, his way of doing business, putting key people in there, leaving them alone. It was the LA Times for a good article today with Lawrence Frank, Jerry West, and Doc Rivers and his staff. Just demonstrates how a smart owner, a good owner, an owner that has good money and allows good things to happen. And to me, they're a model franchise.
I have to ask you, because you're out there, and you, when I look at the team, I can remember when I was there, you know, the Benoit Benjamins and Elgin was the general manager. I could never envision them being the way it is today. If you look at them playing in the same arena with the Lakers and just starting to get their respect, you're out there, your son is out there. Is this a team that's, when I look at the Clippers now, I believe they have one more move they have to make before the trade deadline. Hopefully that will be Kevin Love or Nikola Vucevic. But do you see this as being a team that could possibly contend, Mr. Casey, if everything
Absolutely.
Goes right?
Absolutely. Particularly in a seven-game series, yes, when you have those two superstars and a very good surrounding cast and an experienced coaching staff. You know, back when we were up there, we had no practice facility. The sports arena was only open, and if Coach Pippi and Coach Ravley were not having practice. Otherwise, we had to seek. We had Loyola, and then the Lakers took that over and wouldn't let us in there. So we were at Cal State Dominguez Hills. We were at UCLA. We were like just running all over the place, Occidental. So there was no real continuity for us. So we lacked practice, took the facility. We only had two baskets on the court because they would charge, because of labor rules, $50 to put up the two side baskets each, and then $50
oh my
to take
God.
Them back down, and Shirley wouldn't pay for it. So we didn't have enough baskets to really get the shots up or whatever. It was the most disadvantage that you could see looking back. But everyone said, screw it. You know, we all worked hard. Like I said, we brought in Jack Ramsey. We brought in everybody we could. And the players tried. They really did. And I think when I left, we ended up with 30-31 wins in a very difficult conference. You know, Stockton, Malone, Hakeem, Jabbar, what was going up in Seattle. So, no, I think those players and our coaching staff, I think we did a good job.
Mr. Casey, let me before we start back, let me welcome our audience. I want to welcome everyone. Thank you for tuning in to Derek Irvin's As Good As It Gets podcast. We have a full cast tonight. I have my partner, Mr. Ricky Hampton. Michael Robertson is also on the show today. And our special guests are Mr. Don Casey and his son, Mike Casey. So I want to thank everyone for tuning in. I'm going to jump right into this before, and then, Mike, I want you to go after this. I want to ask, Mr. Casey, you just mentioned some names, some legends. What do you think about from what the way the game has started, and sometimes I think about Mr. James Naismith, the way the game has evolved. I want to know what you and your son think about the game that we're looking at today.
Well, I spent 9 days with Dwayne Casey and his staff at the Pistons training camp. Came in, Arne Tellin, who's the chairman there, Eddie Stefanski is the GM, and saw, up front and personal. And I've not been involved, at a game, watching, but not as much as my wife or son do. It's a very different game in that the perimeter game is the game. In fact, 2 days ago, I was speaking with Jackie McMullen, the sports writer and columnist from the Globe, who was going down to Atlanta to meet with Shaq and Barkley. And they were going to discuss the missing post game. of where there is no centers. In fact, the NBA doesn't even have it on its all-star list. It's all forwards. How the game has gone from outside to sometimes in, and the influence of the three-point line. But there's another thing that is troubling today. The NBA has a illegal defense, 3 seconds,
right.
They call it. It's the only league in the world, in any sport, in any country, that legislates what you cannot do on defense. Now, you have to think about that. Just think that if you said to the NFL that the fans love passing, they love the catch and the drama of it, that you could only play man-for-man defense in the defensive secondary. The NFL is smart. They're saying, what? No. We're going to play zone. We're going to play double teaming. We're going to, you know, switch. We're going to do, you know, what we can do to guard those tremendous, you know, receivers. The NBA, you cannot play like you learned in college or high school, man-for-man defense, where you are in the lane off your player, and it's the object of the offense has to move you out of the lane, like the triangle, you know, as for Princeton, as the UCLA, as the, you know, the stack offense that you see everywhere else in the world. And it has hurt us by those rules, as you saw in the World Cup, where teams play a sagging man, clogging up the lanes, and our offense, not that we're dumb, are not familiar with it, and we get stagnated. Then they go to a zone, which, my God, you're playing a zone? How dare you? And we lose. We're 1-7 in the world game. Now, people say, well, you know, the LeBron and those guys, give those players that played their just due. Everyone that was on that world team was an NBA starter. Now, he may not be, you know, the classic guy that's run up and down the All-Star game, you know, in the air, but they were all NBA quality player starters that went 1-7, mainly because they were not familiar with the defense that the other teams played. Now, why does the NBA do that? It's marketing. They think the fans love the scoring, which they do. But when you see, as we saw the other night, a 158 to 132 in-season game, something is amiss. That score was almost duplicated from the All-Star game 2 years ago, and the NBA said, we've got to stop this. These players have to take this more serious. They can't be scoring that many points in the game. 158 to 132, and it happened about 5 days ago. So I leave that judgment up to you people that are, you know, watching it more than I. I saw where Jeff Van Gundy on the TV was criticizing how people are not watching in-season games. I don't know what the inference was, but I just think the overwhelming of just, you know, shooting duck is, I think, will take its toll. I don't like it. I like the skill I see, but I don't like the game. I love Andre Drummond, how he ran down the floor, quick post up in there. Blake Griffin, a little bit. We made a living at Boston posting up, God rest his soul, Reggie Lewis. Mark Jackson made a fortune posting up downtown. They don't do that anymore. I don't know why.
Mike Casey, what do you think, sir? And then Mike Roberts, I want you to chime in as well. What do you think, Mr. Casey?
I miss the physicality from back in the day. I mean, I was never a Philadelphia 76ers fan, but, you know, where are the Andrew Tonys? You know, the Boston Strangler, you know, those nicknames.
Yeah.
He, I mean, Derek, I mean, you used to shoot, you know, some pretty deep threes, but you could also go baseline. It's like nobody wants to go in the paint. Everyone, like you said, you know, I understand some of the people that have these growth spurts. Like, I think Kevin Durant, where he was a point guard until he was a junior, and like in that summer he grew like 10 inches, so he knew how to dribble. I miss the old, you know, just the physicality of it. I mean, you don't need the Kurt Rambis, Kevin McHale thing, or, you know, Danny Ainge biting Tree Rollins' fingers. But, you know, the physical play isn't there. And it's almost like the guys, like my dad said, the skill is there. I mean, these guys are great shooters. There's no denying that. I mean, they are scorers. And in my opinion, give a new meaning to that word. But, you know, where's the guy that's running baseline and doing a double curl and wants to come up and do a pick and pop? You know, everyone
right.
stands. Everyone stands. And, well, you know why the guy, I'm not going to pick on anybody, but, you know, you know, one of the deep scorers, you know, with the big shooters.
Mike, I'll say it.
The reason why James Harden is shooting from 35 feet away because he was only 10 feet past the half court line. He doesn't play defense. It's like my dad said, like the All-Star game. It's almost cherry picking, but they're not. They found that nuance, like my dad said, and it's in limbo. So, you know, and I used to make fun of people, you know, guys at the gym, you know, you always had that one older gentleman in, you know, the Thursday night pickup game who would shoot from 35, 40 feet out. He wouldn't pass the ball, but yet he would make it every time. And I always, my theory was, you know what, I'm not even going to guard you. Because you're going to shoot it anyway, and you're not going to pass the ball. If you're going to make it, you're going to make it. It seems like that, even though it's not, I mean, that's how I equate, you know, some of the guys that don't pass. And when you sit there and you hear the broadcaster say, you know, he just dribbled 54 dribbles before he shot it. I mean, who's counting that? And it's like, I mean, the analytics, I think, are great, but, you know, who is the intern that got hired and said, your job is to count the dribbles that Harden does, or any player? And it's like, you know, and I think he does amazing shots because there's something, even though I'm right-handed, there's just always something smooth about a left-handed shot. It just looks clean. But there's no game anymore. It's like, I don't know if it's a true statement, but, you know, in today's basketball, like, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar doesn't exist. He's too big to play the game. It's like, how do you not – remember the old phrase, you can't teach height? It's like, yeah, you're going to be 6'10", but you're going to dribble the ball up. You know, it's you're shooting for three to make four, you know, instead of pushing it down in the paint, you know. I mean, I'm sure you guarded up against Larry Bird in your day, and, you know, he would trash talk you. He would tell you where he's going to go. He would give you the playbook, and he would still make it.
Mike, are you trying to make me look bad, sir?
No, I'm just saying, it's like, you know, there's this, and you know what? There's guys like yourself and like Derek Smith. God rest his soul. He was an amazing friend of mine when he played with my dad at the Clippers, and then when they brought him into the Celtics, he wanted that matchup. He wanted Patrick Beverly. I will take Kevin Durant. What's he gonna do? Foul me six times? I'll take it. You know, I think that's missing from the game. Although it's still there, I miss the old days. It's like. Like NCAA basketball in the 80s, like 78 to like 92. Those to me, that's the best of basketball. I mean,
Mike mentioned something when he talked about what he missed. Coach Casey, I'm in Detroit. I covered the Pistons. I covered that championship team in 2004 here. And I don't see anybody running the baseline like Riff Hamilton did back then. Is it anybody in the NBA that does that now? You know,
well,
they used to call
and I've heard of college coaches took that video of him and then, you know, splice it up to show. I mean, this person, Rick, he ran, I mean, like a sprinter, coming off of the pick, back and forth, reading the picks, a lost art with that, because the game is like a four out, one in at the best. But see, we all have to be careful here, because talking to the present generation in the audience, we can always say back in our day or back in the old days of like the big three. Well, when you mentioned that to some of the others a few years ago, you know, it was Dwayne Wade and LeBron and so forth. Now, that was the big three. It wasn't, you know, Chief McHale and Bird. So it's a hard mixture in today's game what these coaches are, I don't say dealing with, having to construct the best offense and defense for the modern day player. The modern day player, though we know the fundamentals never change, you know, pass, shoot, defense, skills. But it's the, I don't know the word, but we used to use the word that we would surgically go after the opponent. Now, Reggie, Dee Brown, Rick Fox, Gamble, Shaw, I mean, they could run with the best of them. But the Kleins, the Pickneys, and that group, you know, there was a push-pull type. So now today, you know, I think the coaches, it's not easy because of the modern-day conception, you know, of the game.
Yeah,
I don't know if it'll change, and I don't know. I don't say it's bad, but if you look at the standings, where teams are like 4-15, I mean, really deep in, how are they going to get back? They don't have the superstars. The free agent market is difficult. They only can play one defense per se, even though Toronto and Miami are playing a lot of different zone type defenses. To change the pace of the game, but by and large, it's a homogeneous type league.
And the game
but
is changing. Let me just
say
put this in right quick to go on top of that point, and then we get to Mike Robertson, and then Mike Casey. Coach, last night I had a chance to see Imani Bate, the 15-year-old Super South at Ypsilanti High School, Ypsilanti Lincoln High School, 6'9", went to the gym. They played at Eastern Michigan. They had 5,000 people there. Izzo was there, Juwan Howard, all the coaches, Big Ten coaches. His team actually, he's a skilled player, no doubt about it. 6'9", he's very skinny, he's going to get stronger. But they actually lost the game. They had him playing post, coach. They had him playing point, and he was getting the ball 30 feet from the basket. The other team put a 5'10 football player on it and just dogged him the whole night.
Yeah.
He never went down in the post to get the ball there, and he's an excellent passer and distributed the offense, but they wore him down because every time he got to the basket, he had to get 30 feet. He had to get 10 feet to get a three-point shot off.
Yeah, the word stretch has been, you know, really emphasized. I don't know what McHale was. I don't know what Patrick was. Looking back at those things, those type of descriptions, the pressure is on the kid because, you know, he knows, or his AAU people, you know that a three is better than two. Like when Jackie McMullen said, well, you go down to the post and you only get 2 points. I said, no, you can get fouled. I mean, if you really know how to operate, you can get a three-point shot. But the old adage that for what they used to give you 2 points for, they now give you three, that has changed the whole parameter. The kid that pisses, what's his name, Maker?
Maker.
I mean, he was shooting threes in preseason. Now, what is he, 6'10 or more?
Yeah, 6'10, 6'11, yes, sir.
Now, I don't know if he has a post-up game. I didn't see him in all the drills.
No.
But he was coming down the left, and Dwayne did not say anything to him. I mean, that's okay. I mean, that's his team, and he knows the players. But there's a typical 19, 20-year-old kid who came through, you know, from Africa to Canada, but and always he's down there shooting threes. The days, I mean, everyone used to, like, I don't know, laugh to a certain extent. One minute used to shoot the threes and made some of them. But stand out there at half court, if you guys can remember that, when Nelly, he stood at half court so you could not play five men on defense. I mean, that's how ridiculous the rules got until David Stern said enough of this. But it's I don't know. Until some team that does,
hey, so,
does different and posts people up, then it's not going to change.
So we're going to blame – I'm blaming – did you hear that? Yeah, they started putting those guys out on the post. I'm going to blame Don Nelson for starting that because, yeah, he did put Manute out there.
Manute was a funny guy. Manute was a good guy. I got to know him through Chris Mullin. It was so, I don't like to use the word goofy show. It was like a show. You know, it was like, you know, he would, you know, come sauntering down, get, you know, a couple steps past half court, and the fans would yell, Manute, and they'd throw it out to him, and then he'd fire it up, and he'd make a few periodically. It was like a sideshow. I didn't like it. And I told Nelson that. I mean, I don't care who you are. I mean, it's like a quasi-freak show.
Go ahead, Mike.
No, I was just gonna piggyback off of what my dad said about, you know, the scoring. But, you know, remember back in, you know, the mid-'80s or, you know, the scores were like 150, 140, or 165. They weren't blowouts. I mean, the teams are scoring 150, 160 points in no overtime. And they were competitive games. Like my dad said, you know, 150 to 32, 132, and, you know, 30 of those points are, you know, junk time points. But it just seems like we're now at the scoring pace of we were when people say, when I say, you know, back in the day, meaning my day, the 80s
that's
that we're talking
the Doug
about.
Day. I'm sorry, Mike, the Doug Moe day. That's the
exactly,
Doug Moe day,
exactly.
The Alex English, the Kiki Vandeweghe. That's George's era before George got up in age. The Kiki Vandeweghe, the Alex Englishes, that's when they were scoring, the Brian Winters and all those guys when they started scoring the 150s.
Yeah, but the thing is, when the Dick Mottas and the John McClouds and the Ramseys and that group came into who were more – non-player coaches that dug in a little bit more, like Chuck did with the Jordan rules, and you know the battle, the Pat Riley, when he got into the defensive schemes of things. That kind of changed the landscape. Prior to that, you know, the players were averaging the teams over 100 shots a game. It's like I got mine, you get yours. They were just. And then Red Auerbach came in and changed that up with the, you know, a little more intensity on the defensive end, turned the defense into offense, you know, defend to run to score. And so the mindset changed. But before it was like, you know, the OK Corral, it was a shootout. But that mindset changed with the coaches, like controlling the game enough. And you still have the 24-second clock, or the coach did not have that much control. The player still could express himself, but it came in when Ramsey, came in with Portland and did the, you know, down and beat the Sixers back in, what, 78, 79. That
77.
Was part of the landscape of it. And you guys have played under the old illegal defensive rules that spread the floor out, made it more accommodating for the offense with that. So, all that blended in. But now it's like you think back when you guys were involved in playing. How many layups did you get off the offensive set at half court? You did, but my God, I mean, they were down there. They were digging in. The Chief would come over. You know, even Schmitz, Rick Schmitz, guys like that, had a little bit of an influence. And now, because of the 3-second rule, you can get a layup.
Yes.
Mike Robertson, you still with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
Let me welcome. First, I want to welcome everyone. Thanks for tuning in. We're having a great show tonight. We have my partner, Mr. Ricky Hampton, on here from the African American Athlete. We have Michael Robertson from the African American Athlete. And then I have two very special gentlemen on here, Don Casey, former L.A. Clipper coach, and his son, the great Mr. Mike Casey. So I want to thank everyone for tuning in. Mike Robertson, go ahead and say what you have to say, sir. And then before we get off, I want to go to a particular thing that's going on in the NBA before we get off the air, so all of you can give me your input on what you think.
All right. Okay. Well, that'll be the king ruling the court again. So I want to go back to where a lot of things really changed when David Stern took over, and then all of a sudden we started progressing to want to be more of an international game. And I think to accommodate these players from Europe and South America and all these other places, they changed the rules where there's no more hand-checking, because it probably would have been difficult for some of those guys to score because it was a physical game back then. And then then, of course, the big thing that changed it was when the 88 team lost. And they said, we got to do something. So they brought the NBA players. Then that opened it up to the world. Now all these international players are – gravitating towards the NBA, and in order for them to be successful in the NBA, I think that's when everything changed in the league. And a lot of that was David Stern trying to promote the world game.
Another good person is Kim Mahoney, is her name. She was the forefront in creating basketball without borders.
Right.
Lenny Wilkins and myself, we went on the first journey in Johannesburg, where they were opening it up, and that may have been like 12, 13 years ago. But the Basketball Without Borders that Kim has started, she had been down at the Goodwill Games with Turner and got the Hawks over to play in Russia. That was the first real exchange. So the Basketball Without Borders that's been consummated under David Stern and Russ Greinke, and continue with Adam Silver with Kim Mahoney, has been, to me, the major difference in getting, particularly in Africa and the Middle East, over to the United States. I think you gentlemen are probably familiar with her and would agree with that.
Mike, to circle back on what you were just saying about opening the game up to the world after the 88, and you know, getting rid of the hand checking and such. But what about the comment that the kid from Dallas just said? What's his name? Luca, where he said none of these NBA guys like my age would make it over in Europe, or he was comparing. Oh, he said it's easier to score here in the NBA than it is at home, and I think that's almost like opening the game to the world. The answer to that, Michael, is that
they don't have the rest of the world doesn't have any illegal defense. Otherwise, they can play a 2-3 zone. They can play a sagging man. It's crowded in there. They get beat up in there. So the NBA is, maybe they are correct in the marketing of opening up the lane with that, but you know, now you're talking club sports versus college sports.
Right.
But in the opening up the game to make this thing available and open to all, is Basketball Without Borders.
Mr. Casey, this question is for all four of you, actually. We're talking about growing the game, making the game global, right? And I'm kind of confused. I've written out Adam Silver. He replied before. But I'm trying to figure this out, and you tell me what you think, and I know you guys will be honest about it. We're trying to grow the game globally. And then we got this, I had to bring it up, load management. Doesn't that kind of dilute the product? Tell me what you guys think, because if we're trying to grow the game globally, Mr. Casey, earlier you said about watching the entire game, that it's hard for you, you can't watch, it's hard to watch an entire game. And it's the same for me. And I love this game, and I know you do. But now with this load management, how is that good for the game? Tell me what you guys think about this, the load management thing that's going on. Kawhi Leonard mainly, and I'm a Clipper fan, but tell I don't really like it. Tell me what you guys think about.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad Larry Bird didn't talk about load management with the difficulty he had with scoliosis in his back. And Kevin McHale with his broken foot from the years before, and Robert Parrish averaged maybe 34, 35 minutes a game. And we're talking about flying commercial. We're talking about going through time zones. And we're talking about multiple back-to-backs compared to what they have today. They accommodated. Those guys really enjoyed playing the game. And not only that, they knew that the public was supporting them, and they – it was not wise for them to not support the public. I think it's a, I think it's over, it's overreacting. I think it's a modern day theme. I don't know. I don't want to buy an 8-game package ticket in advance, and then all of a sudden maybe Paul George and Kawhi Leonard decide to have load management that night, and I spent a lot of money and brought my kid there and don't get him to see his play. That, I think, is the problem. Now, the NBA has a rule. You can't do a load management on a national televised game. Now, think about that. They won't let you do that on a national televised game, like Christmas. But you can do it on a home game against Sacramento. So I think that it's eventually it'll catch up with the league.
Mike Casey, you and Mike Robertson, I want you to chime in. You guys both got about, can you give me about 2 minute synopsis of what you think about it? Before we get off the air.
Yeah, I heard somebody say, one of the talking heads on the shows, that nobody really looked at it this hardcore until they gave it a label of load management. You know, that's where Popovich used to have fun, you know, with his DMPs, and he would make up these little, you know, excuses for whatever. But, you know, I'm a diehard Clipper fan. I understand injuries, but, you know, I don't want to see my team lose. And then you get on the Clipper sites, and everyone says, well, it's just the game. You know, we're playing for May. Well, we're getting our butts kicked, you know, on the road. You know, the Lakers, it's a Laker town. We're trying to grab just a piece of that pie, which we never will. And LeBron has played all these games, but yet, you know, just like my dad said, it's like load management. He wants to sit out 20 games. Now, if the NBA reduced the schedule to 62 games, they'd be like, whoa, where's my money? So, I mean, if you're hurt, you're hurt. If you're hurt, you're hurt. I get it. You know, you guys know it as athletes. Are you hurt or are you injured? And I see it as a financial hit. I've been lucky enough that I've never paid for a basketball ticket my entire life. And I can't imagine people paying $750 just to get in the building, you know, and then you got to buy food and stuff. So yeah, it's a little bit of a pain because I don't want to see my team lose. And I know my team would win if said player was on the court, but apparently we're playing for a banner and the season doesn't start until May. So I don't think it'll be, you know, decided anytime soon, but everyone has an opinion and they got to figure it out.
All right. Well,
I don't like it either. And of course, you know, a lot of it now is being pointed at Kawhi. Then, of course, the ultimate result was that they won a championship. So some people are saying, well, hey, you know, if it worked in that case, and that's the way it should be. But if I digress back to when I was a kid, my favorite player is Derrick's brother, Iceman. And I'd never seen him play live. So they were playing at the Milwaukee Arena then. This was before the Bradley Center. So they're playing at the Mecca. And
Iceman had actually on a plane ride, you know, I guess commercial, I guess he slept on his elbow or something like that. So they were saying that he might not be able to play in Milwaukee. So I'm heartbroken. So I'm sitting there, and I talked to one of the ushers. I said, hey, let me ask you a question. Have you seen Iceman working out? He said, yeah, there he is right there. I said, oh, thank God. So I got a chance to see Ice play live. But I was worried because of a legitimate injury. Whereas now you got the load management. Even now, I'm supposed to cover the game when the Bucks come up here to San Francisco. I'm not the Bucks, I'm sorry. When the Lakers come up here. And I'm like, I hope it's not a load management game. You know, so even as a media person, you worry about that. So that changes your whole storyline. That changes your interviews, all that stuff. So even as a media person, you know, you're still a fan, too. You want to see those players. And unfortunately for me, I was at the Christmas game as a fan when LeBron got hurt, when that whole season fell apart. So yeah.
Well, I was watching the Clipper game the other day with my mom, and she noticed that Kawhi wasn't even on the bench on his load management game. So is he in the hotel or is he in the – like you always hear, you know, the guys do make the road trips and they're, you know, almost 100% to get back. And instead of sitting on the bench, they're in the locker room getting treatment. So is he getting treatment? I mean – I'm not dumping on the guy, but it's like, you know, we all want to sit on the bench. There's 15 guys to get to do it, you know, and if you're load management, you're the team captain. Sit on the bench, you know.
But Mike, I think you made a great point earlier. I mean, let's do something with the schedule to give these guys a little break here, but do that. Not going to get all the money you were getting. So, hey, that's not going to happen.
Exactly.
You know, Coach Casey, we had our good friend in the show, former Pistons coach Ray Scott was on, and he talked about when as a player that nobody ever sat out, and you just played, and their travel circumstances were even worse in the 60s when he was playing. These guys today, and not only the travel circumstances, the technology medically to take care of these guys.
Oh, so far advanced, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. The Celtics were the second team to get its own plane. Pistons were the first, and we got Dave Gavitt and Red Auerbach at MGA Airlines because they had a bed in it, and Bird could lay in the bed as we traveled. And that
the MGM Grand, the rock and roll airline.
Yes. So, I mean, that was out of necessity. And what a difference, because the league rule was you had to take the first flight out. Now, you didn't always do that, but if you missed a game because of a flight schedule, like the fog came in and you said, we're going to take it at noon, it was like a huge $2 million fine. So all the owners made us, you know, take the first flight out. So you played in Atlanta, and you had to leave, you know, the hotel like at 6:30 to get the 7:45 flight back in those days. So there was a lot of non-convenient way of managing it, but they plowed through it. The players and the coaches, you just did it.
Hey, guys, we're going to get ready to close it down, but I'm going to say this. The best load management is what Milwaukee and the Lakers are doing right now. You go ahead and you put these teams away early, and then you rest your stars. And that's the best load management. Mr. Casey, Mike Casey, I'm going to tell you, this show has been absolutely fantastic, and I am not exaggerating even a little. It's been marvelous. And I thank you, both you guys. Michael Robertson, thanks for your input, sir, as usual. And
right, sir, make sure you give my best to Iceman.
I will do that. Mr. Casey, as the season goes on, because we're going to have Coach Scott on again, and we're going to have other gentlemen as well, Matt Calvin and those gentlemen.
Sure.
Can I possibly call you and get you back on the show again?
Sure. Yeah. Well, my son's my PR man. He'll take care of it.
Okay, well, I'll make get in contact with him. And Mike Casey, I want to thank you very much as well, and even for making it, finding a way where you could get on the show. So I thank you very much.
No problem.
All right, Derek, you guys are good players,
it's fun to
good workers.
Back with you.
And everybody have a good Christmas.
Same to you. Thank you very much. Ricky, I want to thank you for tuning, for being there with me as usual. All the fans, we thank you for tuning in. It's been a great night. I want to say it once again, happy holidays to anyone, to everyone out there, and your families as well. You have anything, Rick, before we get off?
Good night. God bless everybody.
All right, guys.